Once again, thank everybody who read. At this point, we've got a special speaker tonight. He's got an in-depth relationship to all the problems that Eddie and all of us have seen. He's been a cornerstone of the extension. Beyond that, I'm going to let you let him tell you about himself. J.J. Brent, J.J.B.
My name is J.J. I'm an alcoholic and an addict and pretty much dysfunctional in every area of life. But anyway, my first question is to you. Is anybody in here unfamiliar how to destroy your life, get drunk, or get high? Okay, good. So I don't have to go into a big drunk log and tell you how miserable addiction is, do I? I will qualify myself a little bit, but I like to talk about the solution because that's why I still go to meetings, because I want to know how to live relatively happy, joyous, and free and have a life second to none. So that's what I care to really focus this on. Again, my name is JJ, and hopefully, if I make it till June, I'll have 30 years in recovery. I know I don't look that old, but I was in the third grade with Moses, so it's been a minute. I'm from Chicago, Illinois originally, but I've been in Atlanta since 1971, and I haven't rented a car, so I believe I'm a native. Early on, I started drinking around age 15. I was in sports. Obviously, I wasn't a football player, but I was a swimmer and a few other things. But I had to give that up because I found that I would rather drink. So I went off to college, and I was a pledge to a fraternity. I was an active member of that fraternity, and I was an alumni all in one semester. I spent most of my short college career drinking. I joined a fraternity, and the Greek letters were S-I-N, sin. I said, oh yeah, that works for me. So I failed to go to classes, and back in the day, back in 1908 when I went to school, they had this thing called Vietnam going on, and I lost my deferment. So me and a couple of my drunk buddies said, by God, if we're going to go to Vietnam, let's join the Marine Corps. I said, okay, whatever. They still don't talk to me after that. But and that's where I learned how to professionally drink and dabble in some drugs. They trained me. I was a true professional Marine in the bar. But I got out of that, and I have great memories of that, and I'm not so great. But I know one of my passes, this was just after boot camp. I was in infantry training, combat engineer school up in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and we got a weekend pass. And my buddies wanted to go sightseeing and go this place and that place. I grabbed a case of Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill and found a local motel, and I laid in the pool all weekend, just all crap. And they said, how was your weekend? I said, fabulous. So obviously alcohol is starting to take over my life. I went to work, I found a job in Chicago, Illinois, and they transferred me to Atlanta in 1971. And I was a salesman for a company called Skill Power Tools, Skillsoft. And my boss's name was Tom Collins. There's got to be something. And Tom was a very heavy drinker. And Tom would sit there, because I was living at the Holiday Inn on Telk Road, which was really nice in 1971, until I found an apartment. I don't go there anymore. It's not so nice. But back then, it was very nice. And we'd sit there, and we'd start hammering drinks. And he would get so drunk that I would have to sign his American Express. And I remember saying, and I'm 21, 22 years old at the time, if I ever get that bad, I will shoot myself. This guy's got a problem. Well, no, truth be known, I got worse than Tom Collins over the years. I was very good in sales. I was the number one salesman at age 22 for Steel Power Tools in the entire country. Of course, back then, it was the day of three martini lunches for businessmen. And one thing a drunk should never have is an expense account. So they paid for my destruction. Anyway, fast forward, I went through a lot of careers and jobs and things like that. One of my best jobs, actually my last good job, I was a vice president of sales for a company in Orlando, Florida. And we sold fasteners, concrete fasteners and things like that all across the country. And my job was to take the good customers to the company villa in the Dominican Republic once a month to play golf. I said, wow, this is good. And you know where they got some really good cocaine? Dominican Republic, just saying. And I'd go to the pool bar with these customers, and by 6 o'clock, I'm a wrinkled prune, drunk on my butt, sunburned, laying in bed. I lost that job, obviously. Came back to Atlanta totally, and I did some other things after that, but I ended up coming back to Atlanta, Georgia, and the only job I can find was unloading sheetrock off a truck for 6 1/4 an hour, because that was the wages back then. And I did that for a while. I got fired from that too, because I was drinking. So somehow or another, I don't mean somehow, my mother took me to my first AA meeting in East Cobb. And I stayed sober almost a year. And then I met a girl. She liked to drink. I liked to drink too. And that ended up as a total disaster. I was living with another guy as a roommate. He lost his job, I lost my job, and all of a sudden I find myself homeless. I was 44 years old at the time. And so I found this place in Marietta, and it was called the Extension Winter Shelter. It was nothing but a shelter. So I hauled my sorry butt in there, and they gave me a place to stay, and they fed me. But I gotta tell you, as soon as I walked in that place, I went into the bathroom to shave, and I looked at this face in the mirror and said, wow, what a beautiful life you have carved out for yourself. You've really scaled the heights of success here. You're in a homeless shelter. You had everything in the world going for you. I forgot to mention my two kids and the wife that I lost during this whole debacle. But that's where I was. And the crazy thing is, I moved out of there 6 months later into a sober living of one of my apartments. And I stayed there for the next 20 years. And having the honor of building it into what is now the state's largest treatment program for homeless men and women. And I got to be a part of that. And I remember the conversation I had with the executive director, Tyler, who is still there. He came up to me one day and says, you know, we get the same people in this shelter every year. He said, nothing seems to be changing. We give them food, we give them clothes, we go say some prayers for them, things like that, and they keep coming back every year. He said, I don't understand what the problem is. What can we do? I said, well, Tyler, I don't know what their problem is, but I know why I am homeless. It's because I'm an alcoholic, I'm a drug addict. He said, well, what should we do? I had 3 months absent, no sobriety, 3 months absent and a big book. I said, well, I think we ought to start a treatment program for homeless men and women. And he says, can you do that? I said, oh, hell yeah. I had no idea what we were doing, how we were going to do it, and it just happened. At one time, it was just me and Tyler working there. They got a staff of 45 people today. I don't get it. I'm glad I left. But so that's how that ended up. And so you know, all my sobriety really was at the Extension Recovery Center. And it holds a very, very dear place in my heart. I retired, resigned, left there about 8 years ago now, and gone out in private practice. With my latest career, yes, I became one of those substance abuse counselors that drive everybody nuts, and I've been doing that for about 24 years now. But I was so thrilled to see Rusty here, because I knew Rusty knew me way back when we started Greek's Friendship, way back, and he was with Deacon Pearl. He was with Pearl. Not to get it. Oh, you were on? No, you were not on Pearl. No, not that time. Okay. Anyway, so that's how I got sober. I am sober today because I still keep doing the same things I did when I got sober for the first time. I still go to meetings. I still have a sponsor. I still try and sponsor people. I still try and be of service. I am not going to stop doing what works. And the guy gave me a good analogy one day. He says, you know, he said, I had this car. It had 100,000 miles on it and ran like a brand new car. He said, because I changed the oil every 3,000 miles. The thing ran like a brand new car. He said, then I had an idea. I could save a lot of money if I quit changing the oil in this car. Another great idea. I'll quit what I was doing. I'll quit maintaining because I got it. 115,000 miles, 15,000 miles after he had this decision, the car blew the engine. He said, I don't understand it. It was running like brand new. But he said, I stopped doing what I was supposed to do, and here's the consequences. And that fits so nicely into recovery. I don't know how many people I've seen, and I don't know, my first 9 months in recovery, I quit doing what I started to do. I cut back on my meetings. I gave lip service to a so-called sponsor who I wouldn't call, but I had their number, so that counted. And I just pulled away from the simple process of recovery. And this process, to me, once I got it, was so simple. It's so simple, but my brain was so messed up it couldn't comprehend the simplicity. And I think that's why it works for me, because I'm not the smartest guy in the world. And I have to keep my life very simple. And I have to keep my recovery very simple. You know, I did the steps. I didn't work the steps. My sponsor told me, don't ever work the steps. I said, well, I like that idea. He said, no, no, no. He said, I want you to feel the steps. I want you to feel. I don't want you to write me a soliloquy on what honesty is. I want you to tell me how it feels to be honest. So he made me tell him some things that I really never told anybody. If I did, I was drunk. I don't remember. And he said, now how do you feel? How did you feel before you told me? So I was scared to tell you. How do you feel now? I said, I feel a little relief. That's honesty. It's a little scary, but when you start living honestly, you have relief. And when you get my age, it's real tough to remember the stories you told somebody else. So the honesty is my only survival mechanism, is what it is. If I tell the truth, I don't have to remember crap, and that bodes real well for my memory. So you know, I keep me out of trouble just by doing that. And then he says, you just felt, you felt honesty. What feeling did that create in you? That's what gives me a little hope. Beautiful. Now you've got hope. Now you've got the first two principles. You got honesty and you've got hope. So what you did is you took your hope and you put some action to it by getting honest. Now you're developing faith. I didn't have to pray for faith. I had to do something to get faith. You understand? I had to actually take that little bit of hope that I got from what he was telling me and the sharing with me, and I put some action with it, and then I started to develop faith. If I do this, it appears to be changing me. I did not get faith overnight. I did not get fairy dust sprinkled over my head. It was a process of going through life and having things change because I was just doing a very few simple things. Okay? And I did the entire step process like that. I had to find out what integrity is like. What I had to find out is my whole life was an unprincipled life. It was all based in selfishness, self-centeredness, and what do I need? How do I get it? And I don't care who I hurt. I didn't do that on purpose. I didn't really want to hurt anybody. But damn it, collateral damage. You know, you got to do what you got to do to get what you want to get done. So as I worked through these steps and developed what I think is one of the most important cornerstones in my recovery, and that's the principle of integrity. I can walk down any street in any part of this country, any part of this world, and not have to look down at anybody and apologize for anything anymore. I am who I am. You may not like it, but I do. And it took a long time to get comfortable in my skin. It took a long time to get rid of that insecurity that I had all my life that alcohol took away. It took a long time to build up my self-esteem because I didn't think very highly of myself. And being in the business and in recovery for so long, what I have found, in my own opinion, this is my opinion, that all of our issues are based in low self-esteem. We don't like who we were. We don't like what we've become. But by God, I don't want anybody to know. We live in the ego part of it. You know, that ego is that mask. You know, it's like the Great Oz. Do not look behind the curtain. I am the Great Oz. Don't look behind you. I'm a scared little boy. I want you to see this guy that's 10 foot of bulletproof. But inside, I was a very scared little boy. Didn't know how to deal with life on life's terms. Didn't know how. Wanted to believe that I had all the answers. But the truth is, I had none. My sponsor opened the big book. And the first page in the big book is a blank page. He said, I want you to study that page. That's what you know about living sober. Well, damn, he's right there. That blank page became a very important page in my big book. Because I did not know. I thought I knew. Just like all, I thought we had all the answers. I could bust my way through this. I could bully my... I know. Someday I'll get tired of smoking crack cocaine. That day never came. Someday I'll get tired of going to jail for DUIs. That day never came. I never really got tired of the drugs or the alcohol. I got tired of the consequences it created. That's all. When my pain overrode my perception of pleasure. And I say perception pleasure because really at the end it was not pleasure, but my brain perceived it as pleasure. But when the real pain overrode that perception of pleasure, I was ready. I got my first spiritual gift, and that was a gift of desperation. I can't do this anymore. I hate who I am, and I don't know how to change it. Thank God they got people around that do know how. And, you know, we can go to psychiatrists, and we can go to psychologists, and we can go to counselors, and we can go to blah, 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 blah. I went to a psychologist for a couple of years thinking I just had a mental problem. It had nothing to do with my alcoholism. So I laid on the couch, spent a lot of money, and talked about how my dad never abused me, but I said he did. And all the things that were wrong in my life, how people took. And over time, he says, guess what? I finally know why you're an alcoholic. I said, great. Does that mean I'm not one anymore? Oh, no, you're still an alcoholic. So finding out why I am what I am was not as important to me as now what do I do knowing what I am. Where is the solution? How can I beat this disease? How can I beat my own brain to have a life that the big book tells me is second to none? And I must say that today I have a life second to none. That does not mean it's not all rainbows and unicorns. But recovery doesn't promise us that we're not going to have issues. Life has issues, but I no longer have to be the issue. There's a difference. Things are going to happen, but I don't have to be the reason they happen. You know? So, you know, what this program has done for me, it's given me what I think is really the purpose of AA. and that's a spiritual foundation. Now, let me alter that. A positive spiritual foundation. And there are some meetings I to people been sober 15, 20 years, and they're the most miserable people I've ever met in my life. They're very negative. Everything's bad. All they talk about is how bad their life is. I said, my God, somebody buy this guy a drink. Because that's not why I got sober. I didn't get sober to be miserable or disgruntled or unhappy or blaming. I wanted to be free. I wanted to be free of all that nonsense that I used to rationalize. I love that word, rational lies. I could take a lie, put lipstick on it. Oh, yeah, that works. Yeah, yeah, let's do that. But I wanted to get rid of all that negative energy because that was really the core of my issue. I was just full of negative energy. I could not get rid of it. The only way I could get rid of it was by using or drinking. So anything I could do, and it would give me a momentary pause in my nonsense, in my negative energy. But it was never temporary, and it was always followed by more negative energy. It just built on itself and just snowballed into that gift of desperation that finally got me sober. But so when I say a positive energy, I think that anybody who's been in this program a while, or even the newcomers that are struggling or wondering if they're going to stay sober, if they can stay sober, I want you to understand, at least this is how it worked for me, is that recovery is about energy. People pass energy to another person. Eddie, Jack, John, Sean. I know a lot of people in here that are positive energy. They just are. And Rusty, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to eliminate you, you old curmudgeon. This is what it is. I insist. And somebody told me today, said, how come you always seem to have a positive energy? So what is my choice? I choose to have a positive energy. I choose not to let all the world's crap, and I've survived cancer this year, the kidney and the bladder, they yanked it out, blah, 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 and chemotherapy. Okay, fine. There was a situation, you had to deal with it, and you go on with life. But you don't have to, oh my God, I'm going to die. No. And if you do, that's your time. That's just the way it is. It just is. But positive, and I think positive energy has a lot to do with healing our brains. I really do. I think I can. I think I can. Damn it, I did. You know? It's a positive energy that keeps feeding the brain and healing the brain, which begets more positive energy. I've never seen anything accomplished in this world with negative energy. Nothing. Except pain and misery. So do I want to be part of the world's solution, or do I want to try and be part of the world's solution? And I know it might seem a little Pollyannish, you know, but honest to God, I don't have bad days anymore. I used to, oh hell, I had bad decades. But what I've come to understand in my life is that, yeah, there's going to be bad moments. There's going to be some crap that just drives me nuts. But it's a moment. It's a moment in time. Now, I can massage that and incubate it, and I can ruin my whole week. I can ruin a whole month or a whole year. But it was only one instant. And it's not what happens to me that's important. It's how do I deal with what happens to me. That makes my attitude. That makes me a positive person versus a negative person. I can hold on to that. And then what do we build? We build resentments. We build anger. We build frustration. Pour me a drink. I'm just not going to let things that naturally happen in the world or in my life. I banned watching news in my house. It ain't going to happen. You watch CNN or Fox or any one of them, you want to put a bullet in your head by the time you're done. There is no hope in this world. Well, that's not my world. My world is right here. And the people in my circle, that's my world. That's my little spiritual bubble. When all that crap goes to hell, hey, I got this bubble here. And I hang around with people. It's funny. All my friends are in recovery. I did not design it that way. That wasn't my plan. But all these other people just irritate me. earth people just frustrate the crap out of me. I hang out with people that are trying to learn how to live in a spiritual manner that I'm trying to learn how to live. Success, because you are who you hang out with. Now, I've got a brother and a sister that there's a couple of chairs we're saving for them. But they drink. And I'm fine with that for about 2 hours. And then they get blasted. And that just, I don't handle that well. Maybe because it reminds me of me back then. But it just bores me. And they don't make any sense. And they don't remember. You can't have a conversation with them. They aren't going to remember it anyway. And they'll repeat it 52 times just so you get the point. But anyway, so I hang with the winners. I hang with people that I've grown up in recovery with. Because that's my network. Okay? It's just... It's like a power tool. You got a power tool and you can pull the trigger on this drill all day long. And it doesn't do squat until you plug it in. Now you've got power. And I had to find a power that would energize me to do what I needed to do. It's that simple. There's nothing that is really difficult in this process. But I was fighting the greatest demon and the most powerful machine in the world of my own brain. My own brain was kicking my butt. My own brain was sending me to jail. My own brain made me hopeless. My own brain got me divorced 3 times. My own brain destroyed my life. What the heck kind of brain is that? That you destroy your own life. It's nobody else doing this. It's your own brain. It was my brain causing all these issues. No, hell no, it ain't me. No. And it's certainly not alcohol. Oh, no. It's all these morons. When I quit blaming and started owning, I found a way to change. But I had to own what a mess I was. I had to own it. Because if I don't own it, there's no solution. I mean, if it's your problem, if you're the problem, there is no solution. I've got to do my own thing and get gut-level honest. Thank God that there are sponsors around that have gone through this stuff before me. Thank God there are people that, you know, when I was brand new, there were people with 15, 20, 30 years of sobriety at that time. And for some reason, I found the ability to listen, which I've never done in my life, because I had all the answers. But somehow or another, and it's a God thing, somehow or another, I started opening my ears, not so much to hear what they say. What I found is I found people, and I'd look at them and say, they seem really happy. I want to be like that person. I'd go up to them. And they say, no, I don't sponsor you. You're a mess. So I go to another. But I found people that seem to be enjoying their life in sobriety, really enjoying life. Because I forgot how to have fun. That was a long time ago. I forgot how to have fun. I truly did. So I picked people that were crazy, fun, always doing something, going somewhere. Sean, you know this from the extension. They're always doing something. These alumni people, they're always doing something together. I mean, it's the tightest family I've ever seen. But that's the type of thing I got in the fellowship. It's available to all of us. But a lot of us will sit back in the room and we'll get there late and we'll leave just before the Lord's Prayer just because we don't want to talk to anybody. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the solution. Talking to people. Engaging with people. Getting connected with people. That is the solution. You can work all the steps you want in your bathroom for the rest of your life, but you're not engaging with other people, you ain't done crap. We have to engage. I mean, I'm a guy that's always smiles and stuff. Few people sleeping, but that's cool. I get it. But that's what I want to talk about is the energy. You know, smile. Enjoy life. So, what are you going to do today? I'm going to live life. What does that mean? I have no clue. I don't know. But I'm going to live it. I'm not going to sit and I'm not going to hibernate. I'm not going to isolate. I'm going to get engaged. I'm just going to engage. And I'm going to engage with people that have already learned how to engage, because they're going to show me how to do that. It's all about the energy. You know, and you've been around and you sponsor people. I'm not Pat. I do some speaking, some motivational things and things like that. People don't hear what I say, and I don't care. I want them to feel what I say. I want them to feel the energy. I want them to feel that positive spiritual energy that can just give them a little bit more hope to go have a better day tomorrow. I want that, and that's what all of our jobs, as far as I'm concerned, the two most important dates of our life was explained to me this way. The day you were born and the day you find out why. God. A sense of purpose. Why, God, am I here? I know I'm not here to be a support system for a bottle of Budweiser. I know that. But I don't know why I'm here. And he found and developed this beautiful program of Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous, every 12-step group there is, and said, here, do this. The purpose will find you. Wow. The purpose will find you. I never, in all of my years, never, ever, ever intended to be a counselor or a sponsor or involved in the recovery world. I had delusions I was going to be a big speaker at Mercedes-Benz Stadium with 50,000 people in there hanging on every word I would say. And here I am on a Friday night talking to a bunch of drunks and addicts. What the hell? And loving it. Loving it, because this is what I'm supposed to do. When Jack and John approached me, my first thought, I don't want to go to Ridgeview on a Friday night at 7:30. My God, I live in Cartersville. That's about a 3-day drive. But I said yes, and I'm so glad I did, because you may not get sober because of me being up here, but I sure as hell am staying sober. Okay? And I feel good. And because I feel your energy. I feel your positive vibes. I feel your hope, and your hope gives me hope for tomorrow. And that's what I live on. That's what I count on. That's my spiritual food, my daily bread, if you will, is the energy I get by being around people that are doing the do. Not talking to do, but doing the do. People that are really engaged in this journey with no end. Don't know where it's going to take us. But what I do know is wherever it's taking me is sure a hell of a lot better than where I was. So this doesn't matter so much. My goals change every day. Whatever. But that's okay. There are better goals and there's a better destination than what I had in my alcoholism and my drug addiction. And that to me is a miracle. We are all in this room to get better. Whether you're motivated by probation or a family or the courts or whatever it is, you're here. You're here. And if we're going to engage in any activity, give it 100%. Give it everything you've got. Because it tells us in the promises, half a measure is avail is nothing. We don't get this by osmosis. I can't sit next to Jack and get sober. I have to do what I'm supposed to do. I have to engage people that want to go and make their life better. And therefore, my life will get better because I'm doing what they do. I don't know how much more simple that can be. So it's not a decision whether you want to stay sober or whether I want to stay sober. It's what I am willing to do. What am I willing to do? How much am I willing to commit to get this prize? And I'll be honest with you, I'm willing to commit every effort in my body, in my soul, because this is a life second to none. And it is available to all of us. And all of us have this opportunity. It's up to how bad do you want it. And if we want recovery half as bad as we wanted a cold beer, you're going to be fine. You know? Or your next hit, your next shot. If we put some kind of effort into this thing like we had today, you're going to be fine. And if I sound like I'm preaching, I'm sorry. Too bad. That's what I do. And but I want to thank you for letting me come up and talk with you, not to you, but with you. And anybody wants to talk to me after me, come on up, say hey. And I love you all very much, and I wish you the very, very best of your lives. Thank you.
Thank you, JJ. You presented a perspective that's going to have ongoing meaning to me.